football on off the ball.
You called him a disgrace earlier, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I'll call him a disgrace again. I'm amazed at this idea that like Messi is somehow like the player who's got a lot to answer for. It's all the others have a lot to answer for.
Join in the obsession.
The Racing Pod on Off the Ball with William Hill. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
And you're welcome, folks, to episode 141 of The Racing Pod on Off the Ball with John Duggan and Johnny Ward. Remember, we're here every Friday with analysis, race previews, tips, stories, interviews, bit of crack as well. Reminder as well, folks, the full Off the Ball Racing Pod is free wherever you get your podcasts. Johnny, I believe you're in Killarney.
Yeah, in beautiful Killarney, JD. It is day five of the new sort of five-day July meeting, and probably nearly record crowds, or certainly record crowds in the recent times because of the weather, really. It's just been, it was like being racing on holidays, which is something that I'm sure people would do if they could. If they could go to a summer destination that involved 5 days of racing in one of the most scenic parts of the world, people would do it if you were Irish. And, you know, the foreign people here, the tourists have definitely done it. And two jumps meetings today and yesterday, JD, which I've arrived for. Good jumps racing, really good flat racing throughout the week. There's been a great buzz as well, and they've had to water extensively, but it's a magic place to go racing. I was lucky enough to own a leg of a horse who won here before, and it was, I don't know, you just see the pictures and the scenery, and Pat Healy has his camera out, you know, left, right and centre in Killarney, because this is the place to take the photos, and it's a magic place.
Johnny, this is no question about it, your favourite race course in Ireland, isn't it?
Probably still Leopardstown, though.
Ah, Johnny, come on.
Yeah, what's yours?
Leopardstown.
It's just like Leopardstown. It's just it's
Christmas, Johnny. It's Christmas.
It's Christmas. Yeah. It's Galileo. You know, it's those really
it's
good
views
in Champions League. The views. You know, I've said this a million times, JD. I'm really sad, in a sporting sense, sad that Leopardstown's flat meetings have gone so quiet in the summer, because I've good memories of going to the flat meetings there as well. But obviously, the jumps, the Dublin Race Festival has become huge. The Christmas racing is fantastic. It's a top class racetrack for flat and national hunt, and there aren't really many of them around, certainly not in Ireland. And it is my local racetrack now. My local racetrack where I'm from is Roscommon. Galway is my county racetrack, which will always be very, very much in my heart. And it was lovely to see the Connolly brothers, from Joe Connolly's brothers, have a winner here yesterday, Caislán Gar, which is the Irish for Castle Gar, where they're from. The Connolly brothers are involved in that, and there's a great sense, despite the fact that we're in football country and it's All-Ireland final in football next weekend, Jimmy, a great sense in Killarney here that it's a big weekend for sport.
Radio and content, Johnny, is all about segues, and that's a beautiful segue from Joe Connolly into the announcement as well. Again, if you haven't heard before, folks, that Joe Canning will be at our Galway Racing Pod live event with William Hill at the Galway Races on the Tuesday, Mary Mullins Bar near Eyre Square, 2 o'clock, Tuesday the 28th of July. Myself, yourself, Johnny, Joe Canning and Barry Geraghty, former Cheltenham Gold Cup and Grand National winning jockeys. So tickets are limited, folks. Don't delay. $9.99 plus booking fees. You can get them at offtheball.com/events. And maybe by that stage, Johnny Ward, Galway will be the hurling champions.
Maybe, yeah. I'd be more hopeful than confident, but a bit like Mayo, you know, you're going in pretty heavy underdogs and there's not huge expectation. And Galway have kind of come slightly via, I suppose, slightly under the radar, as have Mayo, but this is a team with very little to fear and just so many new players in Micheál Donoghue was introduced. I'm actually doing, it's strange, JD, I haven't been to Mary Mullins yet, despite its reputation as a fine spot in Galway, one of the newer bars in Galway. I'm doing two gigs. I'm doing that gig and I'm doing a gig with Brian McClare as well in the next couple of weeks. So that'll be interesting. Talking to Joe Canning and Brian McClare separately will be a lot of fun.
Chucky,
yeah, who's obviously, I suppose, If you're of a certain vintage, you'll remember him, but now you'll look at him and say, did that guy play football? Because he's so kind of eclectic looking. But I'm actually looking forward to that. I'd say, you know, when he was a Man United player, like I was infatuated with the Premier League, that era. And it still had an era where, still it was an era where the players weren't on, I suppose, absolutely crazy wages. And it was more relatable now than it is now. But I'm looking forward to talking to him. But Mary Mullins is going to be hopping over the next couple of weeks, regardless of if I'm there or not.
I know folks in Galway, you have your heads in the All-Ireland final this weekend, and maybe people are still thinking about the World Cup and everything, but don't delay getting your tickets because they will sell out, so I get them before they do. So, Johnny, we have the Irish Oaks on Saturday at the Curra, and it's 4:35 post-time, obviously a bit of watering, good to firm ground, the Judmont sponsored Irish Oaks for fillies, a mile and a half, 11 runners. This is a very interesting race. I suppose it kind of revolves around Thundry Non, who was a devastating winner of the Epsom Oaks for Joseph O'Brien and jockey Dylan Brown McMonagle, but then disappointed in the Group 1 Pretty Potty Stakes on quicker ground at the Curra when found to be coughing. Now, if she's right and she handles the quicker ground, she surely can bounce back. I was looking at the racing. She's the highest rated horse by some distance, Thundry Non.
Yeah, it's just, this is all about how you judge what price this horse should be, because if this race were run and the Pretty Polly hadn't been run, she'd be a lot short than this. So she has gone way out in the betting in terms of the hypothetical betting for this race because of her run in the Pretty Polly, even though that was over a mile and two and she was taking on the older horses, which was, I was sort of keen to take her on in that race. I wouldn't say I was necessarily disappointed with her run. I wasn't blown away by it, but it seemed afterwards, and Joseph O'Brien said this afterwards, a bit like the other Frankel Mini Hawk, that she wants a mile and a half, truly run a mile and a half. It wasn't a very strong Oaks, but this is the division she's in now. She's back again in this division. She's taken on Earthshot, obviously, who didn't run in that race, and Johanna Walsh. So she's taken on horses that maybe will bring something new to the race, but like I doubt it was difficult for Dylan Brown McMonagle to choose between Thundry Non and Johanna Walsh. And I can't but think she's a bet at the prices. She was breathtaking, absolutely breathtaking at Epsom, and she's returning to a mile and a half here, and that's the key for me. The ground might be a small concern because she was so effective on ground that was a little bit soft at Ascot, or rather at Epsom, but for me, it's a cracking race, JD, to have those horses come in. And Sparanua, there's so much of a story to this Sparanua. You know, Jim Bulger has had not a great deal, I suppose, since Poetic Flair won the Guineas in, what was it, 2021. He hasn't had much since. He's 85 years of age this year. It looked like he was kind of, you know, probably fading into the also-rans as a trainer, just didn't have the artillery. And Jim famously put a lot of faith in Galileo when Galileo was starting off as a sire. He's put a lot of faith in other stallions that haven't worked. And one of the stallions he has put faith in is Dawn Approach, who has produced some good horses, such as Poetic Flair. But the dam of this horse, Sparanua, had done very, very little. And Dawn Approach was more or less just into her as a bit of an afterthought, because he literally lives in the same stable. And she's produced, out of nothing, this top-class performer, had to be supplemented. And the biggest narrative here, of course, is that Morris Regan, who has gone on serious, serious loggerheads with John Magner, they're definitely not going to be at each other's respective Christmas bashes, has bought the horse, and since he bought her, she won in Mallow, and she's around about 10-1. She comes in here with a chance.
So we've spoken about Thundry Non and Sparanua, Johnny, in the Irish Oaks. What about Amelia Earhart, the Ryan Moore man for Aidan O'Brien, won the Cheshire Oaks but was only sixth at Epsom on softer ground, so she'll need to bounce back.
Yeah, she's short enough for me, to be honest, JD, at the prices. I definitely feel she'll run better than she did at Epsom, whether that was ground related or not, I'm not sure. She was good in Chester when she beat a very inexperienced horse who might be better than her in time trained by John and Taisley Gosden. I'd expect her to run better, JD, but I'd be very surprised if she won. And, you know, whatever with Thundry Non, she's taken on horses that she hasn't run against before, who probably have better form than her at this stage. And as well as that, she has to get over a very, very tame run at Epsom and probably a little bit exposed relative to some others in the race.
So do I hear from you that your Thundry Non's your main bet and Sparanua's here each way?
Sparanua as a saver maybe, but Thundry Non at the prices for me. If Thundry Non hadn't run in the Pretty Polly, she'd be around about 5-4 here, 11-8. I don't think she did enough wrong in the Pretty Polly to entitle that drift.
I like Johanna Walsh, narrowly beaten in the Ribblesdale Stakes at Royal Ascot.
I backed her, JD, in the Ribblesdale. It was a tough last 100 yards to watch.
Yeah, she only had 4 runs, this horse. See the Stars filly. I think she's an improver, and look, obviously she's not the top string, but she could be in each way about a 7-1. So the Racing Pod Club is something we have set up because we want to grow a community of like-minded souls, folks that just love racing. The spark for this was going myself with groups to Laytown on the beach and having a ball, the social aspect, the crack of a day race is something we all want to foster, I believe. So you can join the club at offtheball.com/racingpodclub. It's free. Last Tuesday this week, some of the club members were brought on a visit to the stable of top dual-purpose trainer, Gavin Gavin Cromwell in County Meath. He's trained the winner of the Champion Hurdle, the Gold Cup. And Johnny and I chatted to Gavin after the yard visit and about the working of the yard and about the day-to-day. And I asked Gavin first in this interview about his Cheltenham Gold Cup winner of 2025. Have a listen. I know the way you're thinking won the Gold Cup at Cheltenham for you, Gavin, last year. From the moment you had him, did you know he was special?
Yeah. He was, from quite early on, he had a big chance that he could be a Gold Cup horse. Yeah, from very early. Listen, he had a real good pedigree. I trained everything out of the dam and they were quite good, and this looked like he was the smartest of them all. So
when you have a horse like Another Way You're Thinking or Esport Allen, who won the Champion Hurdle for you, or even Will the Wise, who won the Topham Chase at Aintree, are you a worrier? Do you have to just trust your staff? Are you walking past the horse box where they're in the stable? You got a leg? Or is the worrying something that you have to manage?
You certainly have to manage it. Of course you're going to worry, but unfortunately when you're dealing with a number of horses as well, you're going to have injuries, you're going to have disappointments, and being able to deal with that is the hardest part, really. And you just have to deal with it and move on.
I think sometimes when we think about sport, we think about teams, we think about racing stables, and we just see horses and a trainer, but this is a business. You're running a business here.
Yeah, absolutely. It is, but the other side of it is, it's not a job, it's a vocation. But you do have to have it in your back of your head that it is a business, because if you don't, if the wheels aren't greased, it's not going to work. The bills have to be paid, and the staff have to be paid, and it's the only way you'll go forward.
I suppose what's unique about you is you were a farrier first and foremost, so training happened a little bit by accident, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, definitely by accident, Johnny. I put in, I built the apartment here in the yard, and over 8 stables when I started first, put in a 2 furlong gallop with the plan to train a few pointy pointers and maybe sell them just as a hobby. And I took out a restricted trainer's license to run a couple on the track.
You can have 4, isn't it?
Yeah. So, that went okay, and it just kind of grew legs over time. It took quite a while. I had a license for a long time before we built many more stables. But then when it started to grow, it kept growing.
Did your wife Kiva support you in the new venture? I mean, the training it's not guaranteed to work.
She was quite happy to she leaves me at it to do whatever. I suppose I was lucky enough when I was building it, because I was a farrier, that was my income. And the training was a case of whatever money it made went back into it. I didn't take a wage out of this for years, I was probably very lucky that, whereas a lot of small trainers, they have to live off that and they're totally dependent on it, and maybe they hold on to horses longer than they should because they need a few quid, where I didn't need it. So I had my income from the farrier job, I was lucky enough that I could keep people putting the money back in.
Well, on that then, did you do this because you wanted to do it and you enjoyed it, or did you do it because you wanted to be what you are today? You thought you'd make a success of it as big as you have?
No, I did it because I enjoyed it, and it just kept growing. Yeah.
Is it the kick of getting a winner? Like, is it, what's that? Because you didn't ride winners, so what's that kick?
Yeah, I don't know. There's a huge kick in getting a winner, but there's also, I suppose I'm a worker too, and you always want to improve. So whatever I'm doing, I want to be growing, I want to be getting better at it. So I think that's just the nature of the beast.
Just obviously the Gold Cup winners and all that, but do you remember an early winner that gave you a particular buzz? Like, and you had Jerry's Girl that became JP's first horse with you, but was there an early winner you remember?
Trained a winner for a neighbour just beside us here. This is where Ballarat is, my postal address, and Ballarat Hope, and she won the Ulster Oaks, and got a great kick out of that. I remember going to use Pat Martin's Gallop. I used to use it to work the horses, and she won the Ulster Oaks, and Pat was telling me he'd been trying to win that race all his life and couldn't win it, and got a great kick out of that.
You've got this amazing board in the yard here, a colour-coded board where you've all the horses, and you plan out from 5:30, as you say, every day, Gavin, what they're going to do today, where they are in the yard, what kind of work they're doing. Does it become then a retention? Does retention become easier over time to remember all these horses, who they are, where they're at? Does it become second nature to remember everything?
Yeah, I suppose that's a big help to it, but I suppose because I really enjoy what I'm doing and I have such an interest in it, it makes it a lot easier. It's like you remembering who won the World Cup in whatever year.
You know, don't get him started. You know, what wins it in 2026 though? What won it that year?
Hopefully not England. We talk about worrying there, but when you, when a jockey tells you out in the gallops, a key tonne or whatever, this horse is really working well, do you get then a really excitement that you're going in to plan this horse's entry and then you're bringing it to the racetrack and you have a bit of nervous anticipation?
Yeah, but then the other side of it is when he tells you that this horse doesn't feel well, it doesn't feel right, the disappointment in that is terrible, you know. But when you have a number of horses, you're going to have, in one lot, there's a likelihood you're going to have both of those scenarios, and that's just something you get used to and have to live with.
This is Bastille Day, beautiful sunny day. What is the difference between now and Christmas Day, for example? Is it chalk and cheese night and day?
Yeah. Although Christmas Day is a busy day here because we have to ride out all the runners all over the Christmas. But it's actually a nice day. All the staff come into the house for breakfast after. So, but weather-wise, listen, it's, you know yourself with Irish weather, it's obviously totally different. But I still enjoy it. We still start at 7 in the morning in the middle of winter. We have the gallop is fully floodlit, so that's a big help and keeps us going.
Galway races are coming up at the end of the month, Gavin. The Racing Pod Club members are here. Obviously, you want to give them first dibs. Well, there might be one or two that you're aiming for Galway that might have an each-way chance.
Yeah, listen, we'll have a couple for the Galway Plate, Will the Wise and Percival of Galway. Listen, I'd be hoping they'd be two that could run well. It's a race I'd love to win. Any of those big races in Galway, but they're so competitive, so hard to win. I've never even had a place to them.
Will the Wise gave you a good day at Aintree? He enjoyed that?
Yeah, it was fantastic. Conor Stone Walsh gave him a fine ride. The young fella that's going places, and it was a great bunch of owners, and it was very good.
You talk about a great bunch of owners there. If I am, I win maybe the lotto tomorrow, and Johnny Ward, I said, Johnny, do you know what? Because Johnny's obviously very well off. Do you want to get involved in a horse with me? How do I go about it? How do I get involved in saying to Gavin Cromwell, look, will you train a horse for us, myself and Johnny, as a part of a partnership, or maybe even we'll get a couple of other people on board, and how much is it going to cost us a month?
Well, listen, make contact, whether it's with me or with the office. That's the first step. Very straightforward. After that, we'd organise everything. We'll find a horse if we don't have one, for whatever budget. You know, you can. We've had horses. I know it's an easy example, and I've used it a lot of times. But Florin Porter cost $5,000, but obviously you need an awful lot of luck when you're buying at that level. But it's not impossible. And then regards, I suppose you're talking about the guts of about $2,000 a month for training fees, you know.
That all in now?
That would be all in at that.
And is that 12 months of the year, or would there be a couple of months
of
the year where...
No, that'd be... Yeah. That's in full training, you're talking about that. We charge €50 a day, and then plus the extras and farrier and vet and whatever, so you're talking about $2,000.
And so sometimes an owner might want to go to the races and have a punt. Is that something that, you know, you see other... I saw a trainer there in the Sunday Times said, oh, we're a betting yard, we're this yard. Is it more about just, like, are you not involved in that, or is it just... Do you understand it as part of it?
Yeah, it's... I find punting owners... It can be difficult, you know, because...
they do pay the bills though, like, and if they want to get a price on the horse or they want to get information on the horse, is that not due to them, like, as well?
Yeah, no, I get that, but the thing about it is, Johnny, when you're in a big yard like this with a lot of staff, and you know, if there's a horse fancied and the horse is 16 to 1 the night before, I can't stop one of them young lads having 50 each way in it. And next thing the price is, next thing he's 12s or he's 8s, and then the phone is ringing and I'm getting the blame for it. But, you know, I can't control that. And
young horses in the yard, are there a few, maybe 3 or 4 year old jumpers or flat horses that you're excited about that we might want to know about?
Got a new horse from France recently. I like him, called Nosti. He's just one run on the flat in France.
Jumps horse, sir?
Yeah, he's got a good jumping. Yeah. He might have. I'd say he might run the flat first.
We mentioned John as well just an hour ago or so. Jer's Girl was his first horse for JP McManus. Jer's Girl's offspring then, In My Teens, has become his highest rated flat horse ever after winning at the Curragh. But you were saying there was a nice story with the guy who's looking after her here.
Yeah, Poonam, an Indian rider. She's quite a difficult filly. You know? She's quite quirky, and he rides her all the time, and she's just changed since he started riding her. And she showed it in the Curragh the way she won, and he led her up on the day, and say now he'll be leading her up, and he'll be riding her forevermore.
Lovely, and lots of non-nationals working here as well. Massive part of the industry.
Yeah, with quite a few Indians and Romanians do all the yard work and mucking out. Great people. The industry are very lucky to have them. I think as an industry in Ireland, we'd be in an awful way without them. Seem to be Indians working in every yard in the country.
So 60 odd in Ballydoyle, I think, like loads.
Gavin, just to finish, we've got a lot of people here who've had taken time out of their day to come and with the Racing Pod Club and come to the yard visits. So look, you know, thank you so much for your time and for showing us an amazing yard, and there's so much excitement about the future, I think, with you, Gavin. And just for people here that have come here today and getting a bit of insight, it's the people we want more people to go racing, and that's the key thing, and more people to get into the industry, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to see the big days, a lot of people coming racing now. A lot of young people, which is great to see. I think the student days have been a huge success. You can see a lot of people coming racing now on the back of that.
Gavin Cromwell, thank you so much for your time on this beautiful day in County Meath. Even as a dub, I say this is a fantastic place, I have to say. So Gavin, thank you for joining myself and Johnny on the Racing Pod and having the Racing Pod Club members here for our yard visit.
Thank you.
Johnny, it was a fascinating morning, seeing the gallop, seeing the horses in their boxes at Gavin Cromwell's yard, seeing the horses work, trotting then at full pelt, seeing the speedometer, the horse planning process and the team that he has. A great thing to do, and for the Racing Pod Club team as well.
Yeah, you know, I've been to yard visits many times, so maybe, you know, I don't appreciate how much people appreciate that opportunity to do that. And you know, a day like the day we spent during the week was just lovely. And you see Garvin Donnelly, you know, the role he has. Pat Martin, I think Pat's in his 70th year, going around in shorts, looking about 20 years younger than that. You know, he's been given a second life as a trainer, as somebody who works in the yard with Gavin since he gave up training. And you just see that the team works very well. And, you know, Gavin's a very, very hungry trainer. You know, he's definitely not one to rest on the dinner that he had the night before. It's all about what's going to happen today and tomorrow. And it was beautiful. I thought, you know, that we had a great crack with the lads who came, and, they came from all over the country too. It was a really, really enjoyable day.
Interesting as well what he said about the obviously the multicultural aspect of the yard, and as well that this thing about being a gambling yard or not being a gambling yard, that, you know, it's about focusing on just winning races, I think, and that actually I found that quite refreshing.
Yeah, like, I mean, Barney Curley would have had, you know, everyone would have been a moratorium on anything getting out of the yard. There would have been very few people who would have known what was going on, and that's fine. It's a different life now, though. Like, Gavin has so many people working there. If you are a punting owner, and I appreciate from the punter's perspective, if you're kind of trying to lay out a horse for a particular race and the price collapses the night before, it is extremely frustrating. And in a way, there's not a lot you can do about that. But what Gavin said there is just that's the way it is. I mean, if you don't need to put 50 each way the night before. 20 each way the night before can collapse a price nowadays. So if a horse is fancied, he can be 20s into 6s before you know it. And that's just the sad reality of it. And Gavin has enough to be doing without kind of worrying about that. And the issue with the multinational kind of aspect of the people working the yard, I don't think this is something racing talks about enough, how utterly vital. You go to Crumlin Children's Hospital, you go to any hospital around the country, and you will see if you bring in your child to Crumlin Children's Hospital or you go somewhere else, if we didn't have non-nationals here, there'd be nobody to see me and I'd be just left here because there wouldn't be the workers here. It is incredible what the immigrant community have done in this country in the health sector. And similarly, JD, if they all left the country overnight, racing wouldn't be able to function because they're so, so valuable in terms of the numbers and so respected as well. And it was great to talk to some of the guys who've made a life here in Ireland. Some of the Indian guys have actually ridden in India. A lot of Indians working in Ballydoyle, I think 60 odd maybe. It's an incredible figure, and something that racing just has not, promoted enough in my view.
Okay, that was a great morning at Gavin Cromwell's yard, and continued success for Gavin and his team in County Meath up the hill of Tara there. We've gone through the Oaks, Johnny. I always like these two-year-old races. I don't know, I've got a thing for two-year-old races, maybe because I find it a bit like bumpers. I find it, I like the unraced and I like the potential horses. And we have a six furlong, seven runners railway stakes at the Curragh on Saturday, 4:00. This Confucius is interesting because Ryan Moore continues to keep the faith of this horse, who was favoured for the Coventry at Royal Ascot and then finished sixth and disappointed in the Anglesey Stakes, which was almost an inferior grade, beaten at odds on into third. Questions to answer, but Ryan Moore has got faith continuing in this horse. It's interesting.
Yeah, behind the Mortal Guard that time. I felt he was, if he weren't, maybe he wasn't disappointing the Royal Ascot, he was certainly disappointing the Anglesey Stakes. And I'd be inclined to go against him now at the price that he's at, JD, because he just doesn't look a superstar. The other O'Brien horse in the race carried the flag, has cheek pieces on for the first time, which is an interesting move, particularly considering he won the last time. There might be a great deal between them. And I'm quite interested in switching sides. 16-1, I think, switching sides here, I'm looking at. This horse won easily at Fairy House. He looked a good maiden, won very readily, and he's very, very solid in a race where I'm just not mad on the horse at shorter prices.
We have Sam Norris on the line from William Hill. How are you, Sam?
Afternoon, guys. Yeah, well, yourselves?
Yeah, good. Thank you, Sam. Sam, we have the Irish Oaks this weekend at the Curragh on Saturday, 4:35. Tricky one in a way to work out, but I suppose it's all about Thundering On, as I said to Johnny. What's the market telling us? Is Thundering On strong? Is Thundering On weak?
She's fairly strong, yeah. I mean, she was so impressive, obviously, at Epsom. The caveat that day was obviously the fact that the ground, I don't know what they officially ended up calling the ground, soft cutting places, I think, something ridiculous like that, because it was far deeper than that. And the worry is she going to be as effective on the quicker surface this time around? It was faster ground last time around when she got beaten the Pretty Polly. Admittedly, she did fare best of the three-year-olds in that race. If she can reproduce what she showed at Epsom on the quicker ground, then I think it's going to be a struggle for any of the rest of them to get involved. But it hasn't kind of stop punters from exploring some alternatives. The two that have been probably the best backed in the market are the 1-2 from the Ribblesdale at Royal Ascot, Earthshot, who's 7-2 from 9-2 in the Wathdown colours, who won that race, and Joanna Walsh is 7-1 from 9-1, who finished second, a close-up second in that race as well. So punters are perhaps latching on to the Ribblesdale form. And as ever, we just don't know how the Ballydoyle tactics are going to play out. I mean, Aidan runs what? Five in the race. Amelia Earhart looks the choice given that Ryan Moore is on board. But I said Sugar Island would have had a chance on some of her form earlier on the season. She beat Thundering On, albeit that was in heavy ground as well. I guess Cameo and Beautify and Composing, at least one of them's maybe going to be in there to make the pace. But I don't know. It's interesting with the setup, running five of them. I mean, you don't need three pacemakers. You arguably don't need two pacemakers. So a few of these are in there, with a chance. I just think it looks very murky, the Aidan O'Brien picture. And it's interesting that the punters have latched onto the Ribblesdale form.
What do you fancy, Sam?
I am. Excuse me. I'm minded to go for Innes Moore, I think, who ran a good race in the French Oaks last time around. That's over a mile and a quarter. Steps have been tripped to a mile and a half here. I think that will suit. Pedigree suggests it will suit. ran very well at Goodwood earlier on in the season, actually beat Earthshot in that race as well, who's, you know, come out, won at Royal Ascot, probably boosted the form. David Menwisi trains Ashim Murphy booked. So I thought Inish Moore would fare really well with this extra step up in trip. So she's 7-1.
Worth visiting as well, Sam, if you're over in Ireland again, Inish Moore, an island off the Galway coast. So if you haven't already.
Okay, no, I haven't. I shall put that on the bucket list. I didn't know that, so if nothing else, at least I've learned something from talking to you chaps, which I always do, to be fair, every week.
There's three islands. They're called the Aran Islands off the coast of Galway. There's Inishmore, Inishman, which is the middle one, and Inishere, where I went to Irish college when I was a teenager. Okay. Twice. So there you go. You need to learn Irish, and then by the time you're 18, you don't use it as much, but Johnny knows all about this. Johnny, we have the Meadowcourt Stakes at 2:15 at the Curragh on Saturday. This is what, a 1 mile, 2 furlong race with 8 runners. Your favourite thing in the world to have 8 runners in a race, Johnny, each way. We have One Look as the odds on favourite.
Yeah, it's not sure about her being odds on here, JD. You know, she's very, very good. She probably doesn't go off as short as this very often. And horses from this yard are very reliable. That run the last day at the Curragh obviously entitles her to, and I spoke about the race earlier, titles go very well, but Naira is interesting for me. She was just behind Sparanua at Cork the last day. I think the rider even lost the whip on the day. She's a much, much bigger price here. Slight concern about the trip, but I don't see her much behind on form. I'd be against One Look at the prices. Willie Haggis sending over a horse as well that Rhapsody kind of has plenty to find, but Ryan Moore books is quite interesting because he must feel that, you know, she can get black type at the very least, and 8 runners and a short price favourite, JD, makes opportunities.
The 3:25 of the Curragh on Saturday is the Sapphire Stakes, 5 furlong sprint, 10 runners, and Johnny, Rosie Affair is at the head of the market. Charles Darwin's in here as well. Bucanero Fuerte, one of our old friends. And Kendall Roy, I wonder, will he respond to the pressure if you get the succession reference?
Absolutely.
What do you like, Johnny?
Yeah, I'm hoping that Charles Darwin will be good enough here. You know, Aidan has a very exciting team of 2-year-olds this year. And Charles Darwin looks quite exciting to me. And Kendall Roy, probably a bit of a step up, but, you know, he's a horse that's handling things a little bit better as the succession plan gets nearer, I suppose.
The other race is the current Saturday, then the Meadowcourt Stakes, where we have One Look, Sam Norris at 2:15, the Sapphire Stakes, where we have Rosie Affair as favourite at 3:25, and then the Railway Stakes, which is the 4 o'clock, in which Confucius is once again picked by Ryan Moore for that one, for trainer Aidan O'Brien for the 2-year-olds. What do you look at when you see these three races? Do you see any market moves?
Yeah, One Look's been very solid in the first of them. She's the Curragh horse. You know, punters probably latched onto that. Ran at the Curragh 7 times, 3 wins, 3 second-place efforts. She looks as though she sets the form standard. Obviously, having chased Emma Strange in the Pretty Polly could provide a form boost to Thundering On actually later on in the card. The one that's been nibbled at in that race is Dream Assar, Ed Walker and Billy Lockman going over. That's 10-1 into 8-1 since final declaration. So a little bit of a move in that one. In the 3:25 race, we can't kind of happy to take Charles Darwin on again, as we have been most of the season. Actually, not that sure if he's trained on that well from last year. Havana Anna's the mover in the market. She's 4-1 into 5-1. Wasn't that sure she'd make a 2-year-old last season. Actually, they ran her 7 times, which you don't which you don't always do with a juvenile if you think there's going to be some scope with them next year. But a gritty win on her comeback. She ran really well at Royal Ascot last time around. Dropped that down to 5 is fine for her. So I think the money for Havana Anna in that race is interesting, 4-1 from 5-1. And I think you've probably touched on the pertinent fact in the 4 o'clock, John, the fact that Ryan Moore is on Confucius again, when I probably thought Carry the Flag has achieved a little bit more, who he could have ridden. Cheap pieces come on for the first time. It's always interesting when Aidan O'Brien does that, particularly off the back of a win. He's beaten Immortal Guard already this season, who in turn has beaten Confucius. You can forgive him the run in the Coventry, I think, but it was harder to forgive that defeat at a short price here at the Curragh in a Group 3 last time around. So if it wasn't for the presence of Ryan Moore, I'd be very happy to take on Confucius. I think I probably still will, and punters are going in that direction as well, with Carry the Flag pretty strong. But the fact that he keeps the faith is interesting on Confucius, because I think Carry the Flag, they've got the same rating, but I think that one's probably achieved more. But I don't get to pick the Aidan O'Brien horses that Ryan Moore rides. Maybe even he doesn't.
Newbury on Saturday, Sam, 3:37, £135,000 sprint handicap. It's not even a handicap. Well, it's actually not a handicap. Well, is it? Yeah, well, it's not a handicap.
It's a conditions race where horses carry weight based on their purchase price.
Right.
Some yards have been very successful at finding the right horses for this race. Richard Hannon's got a great record in it, junior and senior. They run six, I think. And a smaller yard who've done really well in it, last year's winner, Rod Millman, they've won it three times, which for a yard of their size is really good going. I mean, they've got a couple in this year, but Courage Best is 80-1. They've got the reserve run of Devon Angel as 200-1. They look really up against it. This has been a really interesting betting heat all through the course of the week, though. One of the Hannon runners had been the gamble of the week from Me to You, who opened up at 66-1, got as short as 8-1 in the anti-post book. We're not that taken with this horse, really. So he's drifted back out to 16-1 now. Pat Dobbs rides, but this horse is rated 67 and has got to carry top weight in here. It's just the way the conditions are of the race. She's got to give weight to a horse like Bintar Chand, who's the favourite, who's rated 94. So a 67 animal, giving £4 to a 94 rated animal. She comes out dreadfully on the weight, but Richard Hannon's got such a good record. So from 66 into 8, back out to 16. That's got to be interesting for From Me to You. It looks like the stable's first string for the Hannon Yard, Roll the Dice Baby. Sean Levy rides that one 15-2 now from as big as 12-1. We've laid bits and pieces of Etienne, who's 11-2 from 13-2. Cody Bear Lights has been popular, but it's been a really active, lively market for the course of the last few days. And everything I say now could be old news come race time tomorrow, because it just has been one that's captured the imagination of the punters.
Johnny, has it captured your imagination?
It's tricky, JD. Like a lot of these horses, you know, we've seen so little of them. But Etienne's a very interesting runner, second at Newmarket. This would have been an obvious race to come to, even though he is a maiden. He was very keen in that run, but he has he's helping David Egan here. He's an interesting runner. Interesting to see if there has been money for him as well.
Anything else to know, Sam?
Just that we'll have our Epic Boost rolling out from 9 o'clock tomorrow morning as well. So they haven't told me what it is yet, but fingers crossed that'll be on one of the fancy horses of the day, and that'll be something for punters to get involved with. Stag goes live 9 a.m. Saturday morning. But yeah, it should be a good day. Newbury, the Curragh, obviously the jewel in the crown, really, and a bit of good jumping and market raising as well. It's one of the summer jumps highlights with the summer plate there.
When we put the segment on the radio on News Talk last week, we previewed the July Cup at Newmarket, which Johnny Ward tipped the winner in, a Comanche Brave at 18-1, a massive prize. Well done, Johnny. Fantastic. But Johnny wasn't your charity bet. So what is your charity bet this week, Johnny? 25 each way or 50 on the nose?
Well, that's frustrating, Judy. And the charity bet ran muck as well into the bargain. So I'm going with City House in the Scurry, number 7. Goes from gate 21. If you look at his penultimate run at the Curragh, he's kind of crying out to you back here. We don't have prices yet. He has to be at least double figures. Probably 20-1, it's that competitive. He was 18-1 at Cork the last year when he ran well. Ronan Whelan rides, big fan of Aidan McGuinness in a race like this. So I'm going to go each way on City House in the Scurry. That is one of the big handicaps, the 250. Sponsored by the Liverpool FC Foundation this year. I think the sponsor is a big Liverpool fan, so nice gesture as well.
So each way, Johnny, 25 each way. On City House, number 7 in the 250 at the Curragh on Saturday. The Scurry handicap. I know you'll be all scurrying now to have a Euro each way in that for Ronan Whelan and Aidan McGuinness. And the best luck, Johnny, this week. And hopefully a bit of better luck with the charity bet than you did last week, given you did tip Comanche Brave at 18-1 to win the July Cup. Well done for that. Johnny, enjoy the rest of Killarney. And Sam Norris, thank you so much for being on the pod this week, as always.
Thanks, JD.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
And a reminder, folks, the full Off the Ball Racing Pod is free wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget our event at Galway, offtheball.com/events. Mary Mullins, July the 28th, the Tuesday of Galway. Barry Geraghty, Joe Canning, Johnny and myself. You can get your tickets now, offtheball.com/events. We're back next Friday. We'll chat then.
The Racing Pod on Off the Ball with William Hill. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Football on Off the Ball.
You called them a disgrace earlier, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I'll call them a disgrace again. I'm amazed at this idea that like Messi is somehow like the player who's got a lot to answer for. It's all the others have a lot to answer for.
Join in the obsession.